The meeting for Military and Veterans Affairs to order. It's Tuesday, March 31st. Absent for the meeting will be Representative Kawasaki. Presently here is myself, Representatives Lynn, Book, and Ramirez. For some housekeeping, if you have a cell phone, or you're playing with one, or you're being distracted by one, or you're not paying attention.
Airplane mode?
No. We don't want it on game mode, airplane mode. Any mode. Want to have your undivided attention unless you're texting Terry and Terry's texting back to you. Things like that happen. Three bills. H.J.R. 29, designating 2009 as the year of the Army NCO. Mine. H.J.R. 24, federal school lunch programs by Representative Ramirez. And H.B. 24, procurement preference for veterans by Representative Faircloth or their respective representatives. Let's start with H.J.R. 29 and Sandra Wilson, who is my aide, will testify on behalf of H.J.R. 29. And when I know we're going to have a question or two, but we're ready. So, Sandra, introduce yourself and who you represent.
Hey, my name is Sandra Wilson, and I am staff to Representative Gatto. The U.S. Army announced in October of 2008 that 2009 would be the year of the non-commissioned officer. NCOs are the backbone of the Army, an invaluable wealth of information, knowledge, and experience. NCOs remain in the background. They ensure that the day-to-day operations of their company run smoothly. They work side-by-side with their soldiers, setting a good example and ensuring that those soldiers are the best that they can be. The Army plans to showcase the NCO story in the Army to the Army and American people and honor the sacrifices and celebrate contributions of the NCO Corps, past and present. They plan on doing celebrations throughout the year for the NCOs. For these reasons, I would ask that you support H.J.R. 29 and declare 2009 the year of the non-commissioned officer.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, when you're ready,
do we have some committee questions or comments? Representative Lynn?
This is for you and also for the sponsors. first of all, disclosure, I'm the son of my mother was an NCO, and my stepfather was an NCO. And we have here, well, actually both of those were NCOs in the United States Army. Later, the Air Corps for one of them. But I'm wondering why the NCO, the non-commissioned officer, is truly the backbone of the armed services, and why we separate out United States Army and not recognizing United States Marine Corps, United States Air Force, United States Navy, Coast Guard, et cetera. Why shouldn't this be your NCO of the United States Armed Forces or the United States Military, which covers everybody?
Through the chair.
Thank you, Representative Lynn. Go ahead.
Through the chair, Representative Lynn. The reason that it is only for the Army is because the Army is the one who has announced it. They're the ones who have asked for it, and they're also the only ones presently that are doing anything this year in honor of the NCOs. None of the other branches of the armed services plan any kind of celebrations or recognitions for NCOs. Just the Army is, and that was the reason behind it.
Actually, and the Army has some celebrations that are planned and some activities that deal with this specific celebration. We have no authority from the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, or the Coast Guard to call this the year of the NCO for that specific branch, and without that authority, don't want to infringe upon their rights and responsibilities.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is just a resolution. We're not changing anything. You're just saying that we like NCOs and they do a good job, which they do. The NCOs in the military are very similar to the staff in this building. None of us would do a very good job if we didn't have good staff. Likewise, the military would be in Hurtsville if they didn't have good NCOs.
Where, Representative Lynn?
Hurtsville.
That's just outside. It's in Washington.
No, that's just outside of it's up in the Fairbanks area.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, we're already out of
Chair,
control.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been done in, once again, by the clever Lynn.
We need your vote here, sir. Okay. This, we have some people to testify, but not on, there we go, HJR 29. So let me go, Major Williams?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to public testimony. Major Williams, are you there? Major Williams.
I've been speaking frantically, but I was muted. How's this?
We can hear you loud and clear. You weren't muted at this end. Thank you. Go ahead with your testimony.
If I could address Representative Lynn's statement. This is the Department of the Army has declared this the year of the NCO, so I really can't speak for the other services. It's not in my lane, sir. But what I can tell you is that I'm doing the invitations for this, and I'm kind of the action officer for this, and we're going to invite NCO participation across the services. Now, that'll just be for Alaska area, and they have the option of participating or not participating. What I observed in the year the NCO displays up at Fort Wainwright, a few miles north of me here, was that on the displays they're showing Air Force NCOs, because as you said, you know, NCO, what an NCO looks like is not just necessarily going to be in the Army combat uniform. It's going to be, in the Marine Corps digital. It's going to be in the Air Force digital. It's going to be, you know, Coast Guard. The NCO Corps is much bigger than just the Army. However, this is an Army celebration. I'm certainly planning on bringing in for the representative NCOs for this event, a representation, a demographic that shows NCOs are bigger than just, the NCO Corps is bigger than just the Army. And I'd also like to include some retired, some of our wounded warriors, make sure that we have a couple of female NCOs. What I want to do is show that the NCO Corps is as diverse as the services are themselves, if that makes sense.
It does. Major Williams, we have a recording secretary, and so we need for the record an identification and an association. So I need your name, and you're going to say U.S. Army Alaska, I suppose.
Well, absolutely, yeah. My name is Major Rick Williams. I'm the Strategic Communications Chief for U.S. Army Alaska.
Okay, thank you. Did that conclude your testimony?
I would certainly entertain any further questions that you have, or any additional clarifications. There's still a lot of staff work to do, a lot of nugging through this this event, but certainly on the proclamation or the citation, this would I feel like it would be important to let you know that we intend for NCOs to be properly represented, both former NCOs and current.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was looking for a co-sponsor slip, Mr. Chair, I was just going to remind the committee that we have about 4,000, 3,000 to 4,000 soldiers at Fort Wainwright that are deployed, that we anticipate coming home sometime September or so, we're just real happy to see this, and would love to see the members of the committee come to Fairbanks when our soldiers come home and participate in any kind of a recognition that the military sets up. It'd be a nice opportunity to show the support of the state legislature when those folks come in. I was just trying to count days to see if we could do a bill signing in September, but I think it's too many months beyond the effective date. Thank you very much, Major.
So, Major Williams, that was Representative Ramirez showing his support for the bill and his delight in having the soldiers in the community in Fairbanks where he lives. Representative Book has a question.
Actually, this was just for the former speaker, and I was just wondering what that invitation would include if I was to come to Fairbanks in light of recognition of our troops.
Seeing an invitation here. Representative Rammers, did you want to respond to...
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Book, you won't be making a trip to Hurtsville. It'd be Happyville. We are going to be very happy to have our warriors back from the good works that they're doing back in Fairbanks and filling our community with spirit. We miss them, and we celebrate the Army and everything they stand for. We enjoy being a military town. Hoo-ah.
Is there a... that's all I have online, public testimony. Is anyone in the room who wants to do some public testimony? Seeing and hearing none, we'll close public testimony and bring it back to the committee. Committee members, any questions, thoughts, comments, issues? Seeing and hearing none, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lynn.
I would move that we pass HJR Resolution Number 29-26-LS0782/A from this committee with individual recommendations, and there's no fiscal note, I guess.
Okay. Is there an objection? Without objection, HJR 29 passes from committee. That moves us to HJR 24, Federal School Lunch Program/Military, sponsored by Representative Ramirez, and I'm sure he has his committee aide here to move the bill forward for him. So we need you to introduce yourself and your affiliation.
Yes, thank you. Good afternoon to the chairman and members of Military Veterans and Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Dana Strum, and I'm a staff member of Representative Jay Ramirez. House Joint Resolution 24 urges the United States Congress and the United States Department of Agriculture to extend basic housing allowance exclusion to all military families for the purposes of the school nutrition programs. HJR 24 enables military families that are living off the base to qualify for school nutrition programs such as the National Free Lunch Program. Families who live off the base are given an additional basic allowance for housing, known as BAH. Due to this increase of income, children of these families are not qualified for school nutrition programs currently. This is an opportunity to ensure our military families do not have to endure additional hardships while a family member is defending our country. And with that, I welcome any questions, and will also note that Representative Ramirez and myself are pleased to work with Josh Temple, the staff member for Senator Huggins, and that he's also available to answer questions.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Rambers.
If I could just augment Dana's testimony. First of all, Josh just returned from a tour of duty in Iraq, and the hope is that we will move resolutions through both bodies in time to have passed this year. Mr. Chair, I remember seeing you at the breakfast sponsored by the food banks during their anti-hunger presentation. This was one of the issues that was raised with regard to the free and reduced breakfast and lunch program. And our hope is that by passing resolutions through both bodies, then can write a letter to the USDA and without an act of Congress can get them through regulatory changes, make a whole pool of children of generally speaking NCO families consistent with the resolution that we just passed. Available for the free and reduced breakfast and lunch program that may presently be excluded because of the way the USDA counts income.
I agree. Other comments? Okay, we have a few people off net that want to testify. I'm sorry, Representative Lynn, did you have a comment?
No, nope.
Okay. We have four people that want to testify on this one piece of legislation. Dean Hamburg, are you online?
Good afternoon. My name is Dean Hamburg. I serve as Public Policy and Legislative Chair for the Alaska School Nutrition Association, representing members that work in school meal programs all across Alaska, providing over 9 million school meals each school year to Alaska children. I also serve as administrator for the 41 school meal programs in the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. My work office is in Soldotna, in Representative Kurt Olson's district, and my home is in Sterling in Representative Mike Chenault's district. I'm also a veteran of the United States Navy Submarine Service, where I served as a Petty Officer NCO and cook and baker aboard a fast attack submarine in Admiral Rickover's Cold War Submarine Service. Thank you, Chair Gatto and Rep. Ramirez and all your committee members for your very kind and appropriate consideration of HJR 24. Let me remind all that the history of the USDA school meal programs includes being established in 1946 when President Harry Truman and the then existing Department of War and Congress recognized that a very significant portion of the young men and women entering service for World War II were suffering from varied forms of malnutrition. As a result, school lunch programs were established as a military support to nutritionally prepare American children for military service. Turns out that school meal programs not only help prepare children for success in the military, but also support success in the classroom. It is a very appropriate action to now take in extending a greater opportunity to the children of military families to participate in free or reduced-priced USDA meals by eliminating the reporting of military housing allowances as income for military families. Alaska children of military families in Wainwright, and Eielson, and Elmendorf, and Richardson, and Coast Guard stations all across Alaska will benefit and very much appreciate the kind and reasonable support offered in this resolution. The requirement to include off-base housing allowances as income on an application for USDA school meal benefits is not a demonstration of support for military families. As a veteran myself, I do understand the important nutrition asset support and that school meal programs can provide to military families. Easing the burden of sourcing meal support is a great relief when mother and father are engaged in challenging military lifestyles with limited compensation. School meal programs in Alaska and all across the USA are ready to welcome more military family children into the lunch and breakfast lines. Removing the requirement to count off-base housing allowance as an income on a school meal application will take down an unreasonable barrier to children that are eager to access school meal programs. The Alaska School Nutrition Association offers its strong support for HJR 24, and we thank you for your great work with this outstanding resolution. Please let the Alaska School Nutrition Association assist in communicating the delivery of HJR 24 to our Alaska U.S. Congressional legislatures and the USDA. Our members in Fairbanks, Matsu, Anchorage, Valdez, and on the Kenai Peninsula are all ready to help. Thank you all so much.
Thanks, Dean, and I want you to know that I believe I speak for the entire committee in thanking you for your Naval Submariner service. Next, I want to go to Tim Wheeler in Anchorage. Are you there, Tim? Okay, I need you to speak up. It's very, very light ability to hear right here.
Mr. Chairman, I am not testifying on this resolution. I'm just testifying on House Bill 24.
I'm sorry. Yeah. There's a 20. You're correct. Yeah. It's my era. We had two 24s here. I just needed to stick with HJR 24, so hang tight. We'll get to that pretty shortly. We do have Barbara Bachmeyer in Anchorage on HJR 24. Are you there, Barbara?
Yes, sir, I am.
Would you testify and give us your name and association, please?
It'd be my pleasure. My name is Barbara Bachmeyer, and I'm a retired Army officer as well as a former public school teacher. With this in mind, I fully support House Joint Resolution 24 and would like to add a few comments to the record, because I think it's important that we ensure that all military children have every opportunity to excel in academics, in life, in whatever they're up to. So, managing work and family responsibilities is particularly difficult for military families and children. While military life has always been demanding, in recent years, an increasing number of military personnel in the active duty forces, reserve forces, and with the National Guards have had to confront the additional demands and challenges of parenthood during deployments, unaccompanied tours, and matters such as those. Of course, this is not to mention making ends meet with paychecks that frequently do not cover basic living allowances or expenses here in Alaska. Providing resources to support parents who serve in the military and the nearly 1.8 million children living in military families must become a priority for the state and federal legislators. Now I'd like to just give you a couple of statistics to think about with regard to this particular resolution. There are nearly 1.2 million children between the ages of birth and 23 years who are dependents of regular component service personnel, and over 713,000 children between such ages who are dependents of reserve component members. The largest number of minor children of regular component members consists of children between the ages of birth and 5 years. The average military child attends between 6 and 9 schools between grades K through 12. Over one-third of Army personnel reported problems related to transferring their children to a new school. I wish I had statistics to reflect the reality of military members who are entitled to public assistance in the way of food stamps and other benefits, but accurate data are not available. The military culture fosters the unwavering attitude that we take care of our own and uniformly prohibit, well, I like to change that, and often prohibit food stamps or other handouts. Undocumented anonymous assistance from food banks or food pantries is the best that many military families can hope for, because in this instance, the military really does not take care of its own. Empirical studies to the academic development of children reveal convincing evidence that nutritious, healthful meals lead to better academic and behavioral performance, particularly while these children are engaged in academic pursuits. In a New York study, among fourth grade students, those having the lowest amount of protein in their diet had the lowest achievement scores. Iron deficiency anemia leads to shortened attention span, irritability, fatigue, and difficulty with concentration. Consequently, anemic children tend to do poorly on vocabulary, reading, and other tests. Children who suffer from poor nutrition during the brain's most formative years score much lower on tests of vocabulary, reading comprehension, arithmetic, and general knowledge. So we simply must do whatever we can in Alaska to ensure that all children have a good start in life and at school, and I'd like to underscore all military children in that sentence. According to John McCain, it is unconscionable that men and women who are willing to sacrifice their lives for their country have to rely on food stamps to make ends meet, and it is an abrogation of our responsibilities to let this reality go on without some sort of legislative remedy. So again, I'm totally in support of this particular resolution, and I am available to answer questions if you have any.
Thank you very much, Barbara. I appreciate your testimony. I want to go one more person, Amy Roos, also at Fairbanks. Amy, are you there? Amy, I don't know if you're on mute. We kind of almost hear you, Fairbanks, North Star Borough School.
Hello, can you hear me?
Very well, Amy, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Good afternoon, my name is Amy Rouse, and I am the Director of Nutrition Services with the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you and the rest of the committee. I'd like to take a little bit of a more personal view, since we deal, as Representative Ramros knows, with an extraordinary amount of military families in Fairbanks. I'd like to communicate with you some of the phone calls that we received this fall during the height of the meals application process. We received an increased number of phone calls from our military families this year regarding the denial of meal benefits for their children. In fact, this is just representative. I had a mother call and asked why her children were denied meal benefits. When I explained that the housing allowance she received was counted as income, she relayed the following story back to me. Her husband and her friend's husband both hold the rank of E4. And her friend lives on Fort Wainwright, while she and her family live in the private housing market. So therefore, her friend and therefore her husband and family receive their housing in kind, while she receives her housing monetarily. Because we are directed by USDA to count all monetary sources as income, we are required to count her housing. Incidentally, since her friend received her housing in kind, her children qualified to receive meal benefits. She felt the requirement was unfair since the only difference between her husband's pay and benefits and her friend's husband was the housing allowance and how it was received. And frankly, I'm inclined to agree. This issue is further compounded because as of January 2009, the military is turning all installation housing over to private ownership. And what that means for the military families is whether you live on the installation or in the private housing market, they will be receiving their housing allowance monetarily across the board. When USDA was asked for clarification regarding the inclusion of housing allowance for those living on installations, they said, we do not count that as income, but for those military families who are still living in the private housing market, we count that as income. This creates a more difficult situation to explain to people. It takes on a very big appearance of treating people unfairly and not equitably. So therefore, I respectfully request that you endorse HJR 24. I want to thank Representative Ramros and everyone who is involved with drafting HJR 24 and ask that you endorse it so that everyone can be treated equitably and fairly. Thank you.
Thank you, Amy. We do have a letter in our packet that you had sent to the Honorable Congressman Young, and we keep that included with the support we have for the bill. I need to ask Carl Larray a question. Carl Larray, are you online?
Yes, sir.
Did you want to testify for House Joint Resolution 24 or for House Bill 24?
It's for House Bill 24, sir.
Okay, let me let you just hang tight for a little bit. Let's go to, I think that's it for HJR 24. Is there anyone in the audience wants to testify for HJR? Eddie Jeans?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance for the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development. Mr. Chairman, as you've heard from the previous speakers in their testimony, the housing allowance that the military families receive does count as income and increases or actually ends up denying them access to the free and reduced lunch program. So I just wanted to validate that for you. And you're not going to have a fiscal note from the department on this because it doesn't increase state costs. What it does allow is for additional federal reimbursement.
Thank you, Mr. Jeans. Any questions for the director?
Mr. Chair, just a note. We had, as you know, Commissioner Ledoux and Director Jeans before us yesterday, and we asked them to prepare a point of view on this bill on pretty short notice. So I just want to thank the department for being there for our body, but for kids and the families also. And it's always a pleasure to work with Mr. Jeans. He's one of the most respected people in this bill. So I just want to say thank you.
Can I leave now?
No. Now I have to counter that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jeans. Does anyone else in the audience want to testify on HJR 24? So that's a great final note. We'll close public testimony, bring it back to the committee. Any comments from the committee? Seeing and hearing none, can I have a motion?
Mr. Chair, I move HJR 2426-LSO710/A with individual recommendations and fiscal notes.
Is there an objection? Seeing and hearing none, HJR 24 moves from committee. That brings us to our final bill, which is HB 24. It's a bill by Representative Faircloth, and we have Crystal, is it Koneman here? Oh, Crystal, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Crystal Koneman, staff to Representative Faircloth. What we have before us is House Bill 24, which is an act relating to the public procurement preference for Alaska veterans. Currently in state statute, we do not have anything set aside for specifically for Alaska veterans. We feel that they do our do service for this great land that we live in, and we do believe that they should get something back, and what we can provide for them is always wonderful. According to current state statute 3630-180, the purpose of bidder preference for resident firms when the state acts as a market participant is to encourage local industry, strengthen and stabilize the economy, decrease unemployment, and strengthen the tax and revenue base in the state. We believe that House Bill 24 will expand this preference to include Alaska veteran-owned businesses. The National Conference of State Legislatures has identified 132 state bills that have either been introduced in process or passed in the last 2 years that address, at least to some degree, veteran business communities' concerns at the state level. We believe House Bill 24 will bring us up to standards with the rest of the country in honoring our veterans.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lynn.
The sponsor of the bill, Representative Faircloth, asked me to introduce an amendment for her, and if you're planning, I would do that now.
This is the best opportunity. Go ahead, Representative Lynn.
This is the Amendment 1 to HB 24. Do you have a copy of this?
I don't have the copy of the amendment. Maybe I do. Hold on. I do have the copy of the amendment. Representative Lynn?
And so... she is going to, Crystal is going to speak to this amendment, since I just received it about 20 minutes ago.
Okay, well, we can take up the amendment now. I suppose it's as good a time as any.
And
Mr. Chair?
And I move the amendment.
Representative Book?
Do we have an at ease?
Okay, we'll go off the air here. Go ahead. This is labeled S.1. We'll call that amendment number one. Representative Lynn.
Okay. And with your permission, I'd ask Crystal to explain the amendment.
Do you want to move the amendment?
I thought I did. I move the amendment.
Okay. Is there an objection to moving the amendment? Seeing and hearing none, amendment number one is adopted. We now have back to the bill.
I gave a good presentation on
that. You did a great job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If you would like me, I can walk you through the bill if we would like.
Or please. That would help. Be helpful. Appreciate that.
Okay. Section 1 of the bill, get my notes straight, is pretty much cleanup language for referencing a new section of statute that defines the Alaska preference law. Moving on to Section 2, which is where the amendment that was passed relates, adds in the preference for Alaska veterans, and it defines what a qualified entity is. The amendment was on page 1, lines 12 through 15. Conceptually, we are changing it from Alaska bidder is a qualified entity, starting right there. We are changing it to read Alaska bidder and a qualifying entity, a 5% cost preference shall be applied to the bid price. The preference shall not exceed $5,000. The reason we're doing this, one, we do believe that we want to give back to these veterans, but there also does need to be some limit. You know, we got to talking through, you know, different discussions. If we're talking in a GSI's, you know, bid. I mean, you know, you're talking 10%. You know, how much, you know, are we willing to, you know, to give up for the bidders? So this, you know, limits it at 5% plus, you know, the cap of $5,000 for those smaller projects. And then moving through the subsections on page 2, when we get down to page line 14 through 16, we, by the amendment, have eliminated subsection D, which is the department shall enter a register of individuals who qualify under this section as Alaska veterans. We felt that that was more paperwork than was necessary for Alaska veterans. I mean, and then section 3, we move on to cleanup language for referencing the new section. And section 4 is also cleanup language. And I do have Vern Jones here, who is the chief procurement officer, to answer any questions as well.
Just 1 second here. Okay, so it's now 5 and 5, 5%, $5,000.
That is correct.
Replacing the original 10%.
That is correct.
Okay, fair enough. Representative Book.
Mr. Chairman, Legislative Aid, I was wondering if you're coordinating other efforts on bills of similar nature. There's one that moved through Labor and Commerce the other day with a 3%, and so it is very much similar to this bill. And so you might take note of that as they move together, that there is some coordination on these two pieces of legislation.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Book, I'll follow up with you after. make sure I get all that information.
It went through the chair. It went through Labor and Commerce Monday, I believe, and it was a bill that had to do with veterans' preference. And it may have been a House joint resolution.
Was it a disabled veterans preference or a veterans preference? Because I think I remember two bills, and one of them dealt with veterans and one dealt with disabled veterans.
Right.
And I hope they're not additive, but that's something
right.
we need to look
so
at.
So we, and in lieu of that, I just wanted to make sure that there wasn't some confusion or discrepancies.
Okay.
And probably to make sure that there aren't bills traveling through parallel with going in different directions. And you may be exactly right, Mr. Chairman, that one dealt with disabled.
And that was a 3% preference on bidding
yes.
on a contract. And this is to start a business, I believe.
Well, it is also bidding on, it's a bidding preference.
With a bid,
as well.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Good point.
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Oh, Crystal.
This is Crystal Keenan, staff to Representative Fairclough, for the record. I did just get a note from your trustee staffer. It was a House joint resolution that she had presented to the Labor and Commerce Committee, which would be House Joint Resolution 16.
Right.
And, and that was a 3% preference for disabled vets?
Yes.
Okay. And I guess the question for the committee is, if we pass a 5% and a 3% in separate bills, do we have an additive process here?
The HR 16 is federal.
Well, I'm sorry. Federal.
Mr. Chairman, if I might.
Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The message that we would send would be mixed is the point I'm trying to make. We're sending one to the federal government, and we're initiating one at a state level. So the question remains, you know, if we're trying to be consistent in our application and our requests, that all I'm just looking for is consistency.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Absolutely.
Representative Rammers?
Mr. Chair, with all due respect to my colleague, I think it's a different procurement procedure for the state than it is to use a resolution to encourage the federal government. And so I think we're A-OK.
Okay. Thank you. We have some people online that will be able to address that question, so why don't we go to Tim Wheeler. Tim, with the Business Alliance, are you there?
Yes, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Tim, go ahead and maybe make some comments that you intended to make and add something about these two bills that we just discussed.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Tim Wheeler. I am the president of the Alaska Veterans Business Alliance. We are an alliance that advocates for veteran business opportunities at the state, city, and private sector and advocate why the federal laws for the service-disabled veteran-owned business community are not working in Alaska for federal contracting opportunities. I stand here today in support of House Bill 24 for a veteran state procurement preference. Approval of House Bill 24 will recognize those servicemen and women who have protected the rights and freedoms we all enjoy. It is imperative that small businesses have maximum opportunity for state procurement opportunities. And to the greatest extent practicable, small businesses owned by military veterans should come first in these considerations. These economic and cultural times are challenging from Main Street to Wall Street, and no group of small business entrepreneurs are more deserving of preference opportunity to do business with and for the state of Alaska than the men and women who have defended this great state and country. Nobody. More and more, the population of military veterans mirrors the diversity of this state. Veterans are made, not born. We are not torn asunder by race, background, or gender. The V in the word veteran does not stand for victim. We must expand preferences, business consideration for all veteran-owned small business. The passing of House Bill 24 would significantly expand opportunities for many minority and women veterans in Alaska marketplace of today and the future. You have all seen the yellow magnetic ribbon stickers that say support the troops. Why is it when the troops put their weapons down and take their uniform off, why does support stop? For the record, Mr. Chairman, I will be submitting numerous national and state organizations standing in support of veteran business opportunities. These organizations represent a membership of over 1 million veterans standing with Alaska veterans in support of House Bill 24. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Tim. Rick Davidge?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, thank you for your comments the other day at the opening of our new vet center in Mat-Su. Mr. Chairman, let me clarify a couple of things. My name is Rick Davies. I'm State Council President of Vietnam Veterans of America and also a member of the Board of Directors of the Alaska Veterans Business Alliance.
And you had let me just interrupt you one second for the record. You had some also recent employment with the sponsor of the bill?
Yes, sir. I worked briefly for Representative Anna Faircloth.
Thank you. Go ahead, Rick.
There is a difference between HGR 16, which deals with federal procurement, and HGR 16 calls specifically for federal agencies in the state of Alaska to meet their 3% mandate. Many federal agencies are doing that, but many refuse to, and that bill calls for oversight hearings by Congress in Alaska to find out why those federal agencies either cannot or will not meet those legislative mandates. HB 24 would establish a veteran bidder preference in the state of Alaska for state procurements. I'm in support of the amendments made by Representative Faircloth and Representative Lynn, although I do continue to want to see the state develop a pre-qualified register of veteran-owned businesses in the state, because it would help the veteran-owned businesses in the state deal with some of the problems with the federal aid community. I understand the necessity of dropping that. Vern and I have discussed that previously. For the first time in Alaska, as in the case in many other states, we would have a 5% preference for veteran-owned businesses. A lot of people are concerned that a veteran business would be a rent-a-vet, and we've heard that many times. There's a specific provision in the bill in Section 2, Item C, that requires the veteran that is involved in the bidder preference to be very actively involved in day-to-day management of the business. And that's one of the reasons that provision is put in there. Be more than happy to answer any questions.
Okay. And so just for clarity, we are asking the feds on the other bill to exercise what is already in public law. Is that correct, the 3% preference for disabled veterans? We're just asking them to make sure it happens. Am I correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. There have been two public laws, executive orders, and a number of other actions within the federal government mandating the 3% goal for service-disabled veteran-owned businesses. In Alaska and in many other states, the federal agencies either will not or just completely refuse to implement that requirement. That bill calls for congressional oversight hearings in Alaska by forced committees to find out why those agencies refuse to do that. Our delegation has been engaged with the alliance for 2 years in an effort to do that and has had a number of meetings with us and federal agencies that have refused to implement the law. This deals, this HB 24 deals only with state procurements.
Thanks, Rick. We'll do our best. Barbara Bachmeier, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairperson. My name is Barbara Bachmeier, and I spoke in favor of House Joint Resolution 16 last week, Friday, I think. And it's my pleasure today to respond to House Bill 24 this afternoon. And again, I appreciate the opportunity. On December 16, 2003, Congress enacted the Veterans Benefit Act of 2003, and that's Public Law 108-183. It amended the Small Business Act to establish a procurement preference for small business concerns owned and controlled by service-disabled veterans. The program provided that federal contracting officers may restrict competition to service-disabled-owned small businesses and award a sole source or set-aside contract where certain criteria were met. That was last week, House JR 16. And it further sought to formalize the means by which Alaska could hold federal agencies that are doing contracting businesses in Alaska accountable for achieving the requested, the required 3% set-aside goals. Now, oversight hearings in Alaska, I think, would be perfect to accomplish the mission of trying to see why it is, examine why it is that federal agencies are not achieving the goal. This week we're discussing legislation that would make all veterans in Alaska eligible for state procurement preferences based solely on their status as veterans. House Bill 24 differs quite a lot in the scope and intent from the federal legislation that I believe got us thinking in this appropriate direction in the first place. I have read House Bill number 24, and I would strongly disagree with a couple of the components. So as it's written, I'm not in favor of the legislation now under our review. Alaska, Alaskans, and all of our veterans would be better served by legislation, something like that was crafted in Florida in 2008. They have some very excellent legislation, and if I can just change the title a bit, it's the, let's say, Alaska Service Disabled Veteran Business Enterprise Opportunity Act. And it very much measures or coincides, I guess I would say, with the House Joint Resolution that we considered last week. It is, I think, a fabulous way to continue showing honor and providing opportunities to veterans who have sustained disabilities related solely to their active military service. These are particular individuals that we do want to stand behind and offer the very best opportunities that we can. Just to make a point perfectly clear, a service-disabled veteran is a person who served in the active military or Navy or Air Service and who was discharged or released under conditions other than dishonorable and whose disability was incurred or aggravated in the line of duty during that military service. So, for example, a military member who sustains traumatic brain injury after having experienced an IED, an improvised explosive device, would be considered a service-connected disabled veteran. And there are other categories of disabled veteran and certainly veteran as we discussed on Friday. The readjustment and rehabilitation challenges of a service-connected disabled veteran are by definition more challenging than those faced by other veterans. This population of veterans should be afforded additional considerations as laid out in the Veterans Benefit Act of 2003, the federal mandate, and reiterated in Florida's SB 108. If we pattern our state program after the federal act and reflective of the way Florida addressed this very issue, we will stand with the United States Congress by A, recognizing a group of individuals, that is to say our military veterans, who sacrifice for our country in immeasurable ways and at great personal sacrifice that may have resulted in one or more disabling conditions. B, realizing the need to rectify the economic disadvantage of service-disabled veterans who may have difficulty competing for employment opportunities in other more standard employment contexts. And C, remedying the circumstances whereby service-connected disabled veterans are statistically the least likely to be self-employed and in many ways are best suited to these small business enterprises. So again, thank you for allowing me to give testimony on this topic. I'd be pleased to answer any questions any member of the committee may have.
Thank you, Barbara. Final person, John Umans.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, John, and identify your affiliation.
Sure thing. John Umans, Alaska Service Disabled Veterans Small Business Alliance past vice president and small business owner myself. Mr. Chairman, I'm here today to support HB 24. I think it's a very important bill for service-disabled veterans and other veterans that's going to be coming in the mainstream of Alaska very soon. Late starts in business, and I call us late starters because most of us was out in the world doing the world's business and the United States of America's business, while others had already gotten started on this. So I think it's our obligation, and I think it behooves all that's concerned to pass this bill to the utmost. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Can you tell me what your small business is? Because I'm kind of curious to see successful retired military who have been able to make it in the business world following deployment somewhere else.
Well, we are a service company. We do janitorial maintenance, painting, and that's what we do, you know, and it's really hard for us as small business concerns.
Thank you, John, especially for your service to your country. I have one more person, Carl LeRae.
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Can you testify, Carl, and give us your affiliation?
Yes, my name is Carl LeRae. I'm the current chairman of the board of the Alaska Veterans Business Alliance. So, Mr. Chairman, distinguished members, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for allowing me to speak on my support of House Bill 24. When speaking about supporting this initiative, I was asked a question of what's the difference between a veteran versus a fireman or policeman? And my answer is very simple. A fireman and a policeman are connected to the communities they serve. They're connected to their families, neighborhood, and the neighborhoods they live and work in. A fireman is placed in harm's way, but he typically knows the type of harm he encounters. And a policeman may come to harm under unusual circumstances, but they're not under constant threat of violence in locations hundreds or thousands of miles from home or their community. We as servicemen are taught to overcome obstacles regardless of circumstances. At a very early time in our lives, we're told we need to relinquish all ties to family, community, and depending on where we're deployed, even our religious beliefs. Many veterans have heard the saying, if the service wanted you to have a family, they'd have issued you a set. We've also heard things like, when it comes to issues of family and opportunity to just suck it up and drive on. The serviceman normally is not connected with any community that they're deployed to. And again, this is a fact based on our disenfranchisement. We're considered transients by many communities because we're only there for a short time. So for a soldier and their families, they tend to get cut off as they're reassigned from location to location to location. This creates a group of people and families that don't connect with the civilian populace off of the normal federal installation. Also, the disabled veteran, after he's done his service, is typically considering himself or her a failure, as that disability doesn't allow them to be the person they were as soldiers, which is a person that is taught to be strong, taught to be physically fit, mentally fit, and ready to do business, whatever that business is, for service of the country. That pain isn't easily shared with others because, again, of that adage of we know as suck it up and drive on. It's a mantra that's ingrained into us as servicemen and women throughout our military careers. Also, veterans typically have trouble adjusting to civilian life. I know this myself as a beginning business member with my inability to cope with people in the business community because I'm used to speaking in a particularly different way than the general civilian business community. Now, I want to point out that I don't feel that we're any different or better than the fireman, teacher, policeman, nurse, and so forth. I feel that it was my duty and my privilege to serve and protect those people in the fine careers they continued with. However, I want to go ahead and put back in that community aspect of being disenfranchised. On a career day, for example, you'll see schools inviting doctors, nurses, firemen, and policemen to show what they do for the community. You never see a soldier invited to a service day typically at a school. As service members, we are just disenfranchised. We don't have the ability to start a business when we're ready to start it. As Mr. Yeomans quite eloquently put, we're doing the world as well as the government's business away from our community, so when we return home, we're ready to start, but we're not ready to be integrated immediately into that community, and that creates problems for us as we start our businesses. And so I'd really like to see this go forward as a way to help that serviceman or woman, especially as we're coming out of two major conflicts in their ability and want and desire to start a business and be successful for the state of Alaska. Thank you, gentlemen, for your time.
Thanks, Carl. I appreciate all that testimony. I have no other person off net. Do we have someone in the audience who wants to testify? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony, bring it back to the committee. Anyone wants to make a comment? Seeing and hearing none, we have an amended bill before us. Someone want to move with the amended bill?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Lynn.
I would move House Bill number 24, 26-LS0135/E, the individual recommendations and any attached fiscal notes.
Okay.
As amended?
As amended.
Okay, and we have forthcoming fiscal notes, just to make sure that that is included in the vote. Yeah. So with that amended forthcoming fiscal notes, is there an objection to moving House Bill 24?
Just a question, Mr.
Yes, sir.
Chair.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do these fiscal notes include? I mean, is there any knowledge whatsoever?
Well, you can get that question answered. Sure.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Vern Jones. I'm the state's chief procurement
officer. Speak up,
officer.
Please.
I'm the state's chief procurement officer, and I oversee the Division of General Services, and will have responsibility for implementing this bill. I would anticipate a zero fiscal note, given the changes of the CS that you just adopted. We would have incurred some costs in establishing and maintaining a register. That provision was dropped. We plan on having the bidders self we'll probably have them check a box on their bid if they qualify for this, and we'll work informally to monitor that and to police that, so we won't have the cost of a register. Of course, preferences oftentimes result in awards to someone other than the lowest bidder. There may be a cost to that because we may not be awarding to the lowest bid each time as these preferences add up. However, we have a very difficult time given our lack of an automated procurement system and the very decentralized procurement mechanisms that we have in tracking those, so I could not accurately give you an estimation of how much we might think this would cost in the increase for the goods and services that we buy. So I would either have a zero or an indeterminate fiscal note given those facts.
And just for this information from the committee, if the high side of any fiscal note that we might incur would be $5,000, $50,000?
Mr. Chairman, this bill anticipates a maximum benefit for a bidder of $5,000. So it's very difficult to estimate how many sure. Alaskan bidders would participate, whether that preference would make a difference or not in the award, and how many times. So it's just a real difficult proposition for us to guess on.
So if we give a $2,000 preference to a veteran, then that's a $2,000 fiscal note in the bill that we should at least anticipate. And so that's what we're talking here when we talk about it.
Yes, sir. If the bill anticipates a maximum $5,000
per bid.
A preference per bid. And again, it's probably anyone's guess as to how many bids the preference would apply to, and what the actual difference between the qualifying veterans bid versus what the low bid otherwise would have been.
Okay, it's possible this bill will then wind up at least having a finance referral. I don't know. But if there was no physical note attached and just the word forthcoming, and sometimes that's all it takes. So with that in mind, Representative Book, do you have your question?
Yeah, that answered my question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Is there an objection to passing out the bill? Seeing and hearing none, House Bill 24 passes from committee. And with that, it's 10 after 2, and we are adjourned.
Thank you.